On the night between 13th and 14th of September, 786 CE, the Abbasid Caliph al-Hadi passed away. His brother Harun al-Rashid ascended to the throne. On the same night, the future Caliph al-Ma'mun was born. Harun became a father and the Caliph within the same night. This night is now remembered as the Night of the Three Caliphs. Before the Abbasids, the first Umayyad Caliph, Muawiyah, had collected many manuscripts in his personal library in Damascus. However, he didn't have texts from Hellenistic or pagan faiths translated because he didn't want them to influence Islam in its infancy. Even though the Umayyads started this, they didn't go much further because of civil wars, notably the crisis of succession after Muawiyah II's death and then obviously the Abbasid Revolution, both of which happened within 70 years of each other and hindered any Umayyad attempts at sponsoring scientific works. The Abbasids came to power through the support of the Persians, so even though they were ethnically Arab, they modeled themselves more Persian than Arab. As a result, Abbasids took many traditions from the Persians. The Persian Sassanids had a certain love for knowledge. Their great king Khosrow I, also known as Anushirvan, had collected many scientific works during his reign. He had them translated to Persian and stored in the great academy of Gandishapur. He was a patron to many scholars of his era. So, looking forward to Persians like him, the Abbasids tried to do the same. Another reason for why the Abbasids, and before them the Umayyads, wanted to sponsor scientific works was because, I think, they felt like a backwater civilization. Arabs were, till recently, tribes living in a very hostile environment, fighting each other over basic resources like water. They didn't have much culture other than poetry and storytelling. Maybe when they looked at the Greek Byzantines or the Persian Sassanids, they felt envious and wanted to have the same prestige, to commission works of art and build astonishing buildings. Muawiyah actually modeled himself after the Byzantine emperor. He built a royal court in Damascus like the one in Constantinople. So I do think the Arabs wanted to have a legacy. The final reason, and this is the controversial one, was religious. The very first word of the Quran revealed to Muhammad was read. The Quran mentions seeking wisdom again and again. When Muhammad took prisoners after the Battle of Badr, their ransom was that those who are literate must teach 10 Muslims to read and write each. Many examples can be found from the Quran and Muhammad's life that preach the importance of learning, not just Islam, but also other things. Muhammad is recorded to have said, "The ink of the scholar is more holy than the blood of the martyr." These days, many people reject this reason because then they'd have to admit that religion might have been the reason for something good after all. You might argue that Muhammad and the Quran only meant religious studies, but you can make the same case for the opposite as well. When Harun al-Rashid came to power, the Abbasid Empire was going strong. It was controlling a majority of the trade routes between the East and the West. It was controlling the fertile plains of the Nile and the Euphrates. Wealth was flowing into Baghdad, more gold than the Abbasids knew what to do with. And as you might know, you can't spell Golden Age without gold. Harun decided to use that money to fund scholars, writers, and artisans. Harun is probably the most well-known caliph. Even in Western countries, Harun's name is more famous than any other caliph. There's poems about him, written by poets like Tennyson. This comes from romanticization of Harun through works of literature, like Arabian Nights. In fact, I think if Harun knew he'd be remembered through stories and anecdotes, he would probably smile, because during his lifetime, Harun loved storytelling. He had been educated in theology, philosophy, and poetry. I think that was one of the reasons that motivated him to sponsor science and culture. We don't really know where the House of Wisdom came from. It was either established by Harun or his grandfather Al-Mansur. Al-Mansur, after founding the city of Baghdad, had kept a library of books and manuscripts in his palace. He might have even moved Muawiyah's personal collection there as well. Muawiyah's collection was also called the House of Wisdom. It's possible that Harun made the library open to scholars, or maybe he created a new complex to serve as a center of learning in the tradition of the Library of Alexandria. There haven't been any archaeological discoveries, so our understanding of the House of Wisdom is vague because it mostly comes from records kept by people who worked there. Harun attracted scholars from all over the empire by making sure they were paid very generously. Their salaries at the time compared to modern-day athletes. As other centers of learning around the world were in decline, the House of Wisdom was flourishing. The budget of the House of Wisdom is said to be equivalent of double the budget of the United Kingdom's Medical Research Council. So scholars from all over the world came to Baghdad. This created a diverse environment. People of different faiths, cultures, and backgrounds were intermingling, adding to each other's understanding of the world. Must have been quite a sight. As Bernard Lewis said, before the rise of Islam, virtually all civilizations in China, India, Europe, and the Americas were limited to one region, one culture, and usually one race. The Islamic culture of the Middle East was the first that was truly international, intercultural, interracial, and in a sense, even intercontinental. And its contribution, both direct and indirect, to the modern world is immense. Throughout his reign, Harun sent many diplomatic missions to Charlemagne. Charlemagne, in case you don't know, was a European king. He was the king of the Franks. He also later became the first Holy Roman Emperor. His grandfather, Charles Martel, had defeated the Muslims some 50 years earlier in the Battle of Tours in France. In either 801 CE or 803 CE or maybe even 807 CE, Harun's most well-known diplomatic mission arrived in Aachen in modern-day Germany. This mission had many amazing gifts for the emperor, and the most impressive of them was a water clock. It was sent on the back of an elephant, which the Europeans had probably never seen since the time Hannibal marched them over the Alps. According to the emperor's biographer, it was a marvelous mechanical contraption in which the course of the 12 hours moved according to a water clock with as many brazen little balls, which fell down on the hour and through their fall made a symbol ring underneath. On this clock, there were also 12 horsemen who, at the end of each hour, stepped out of 12 windows, closing the previously opened window by their movement. According to Charlemagne's official biographer, the French thought the clock was an item of sorcery and they wanted it to be destroyed, but luckily wiser heads prevailed. Unfortunately, this clock hasn't survived, but you can find other gifts from the Abbasid Caliph to Charlemagne in various museums all around Europe. Harun passed away in 809 CE. After him, his son Al-Amin became Caliph. He ruled for a short period of time before he was overthrown by his older half-brother, Al-Ma'mun. Al-Ma'mun was a rationalist. He was a follower of the Mu'tazila school of theology. This school was more based around logic and reason. Well, at least as much reason as you can have with religion. When I was younger, I once heard my father call someone Mu'tazil as an insult, which tells you a thing or two about how they're perceived. The main argument was that the Quran was created or spoken rather than what the Orthodox Muslims believed, which was that the Quran was eternal or uncreated. It had existed since time began. I know, it was one of those stupid arguments all religions must have once in their lifetimes, like how many angels can fit on the head of a pin. Al-Ma'mun started an inquisition, but that's a topic for another video. Al-Ma'mun also started the translation movement. He is said to have decreed that a translator who translated a book will be given its weight in gold. Scholars of all languages were coming to Baghdad in search of patronage. Arabic was a lingua franca in the empire. Everyone from Tunisia to Persia could speak some of it because of it being the language of Islamic scripture. It allowed for ideas to flourish. Even today, when you look at Egypt and Iran, you don't really see the same country. They have different languages, culture, and traditions. But back then, they all came together because they were part of the same empire and spoke a common second language. Al-Ma'mun sent emissaries to Constantinople, Sicily, and Crete to ask for books and manuscripts. Both Crete and Sicily were independent Muslim emirates at the time. This resulted in around 3 ships full of ancient Greek texts coming to Baghdad. Al-Ma'mun went so far in his passion for books, in a peace treaty with the Byzantine Empire, ordered them to hand over the books in their possession. One of those books was Claudius Ptolemy's Almagest, one of the most influential scientific texts of all time. During Al-Ma'mun's reign, alchemy reached a great height. These days, it's considered a fringe pseudoscience, but back then, it was considered the most prestigious subject. Other than witchers looking to kill wraiths, it was practiced by serious scholars. Their main focus was trying to convert cheaper metals, like lead, into more precious ones, like gold. This never really worked, but it laid the groundwork for modern chemistry. Through Al-Ma'mun's patronage, Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi founded algebra and popularized the Hindu-Arabic numerals which we use today. Ironically, al-Khwarizmi was neither Hindu nor Arab. He was a Persian. Al-Ma'mun also installed Hunayn ibn Ishaq al-Ibadi as the head of the House of Wisdom. It's said that to check his morality, Al-Ma'mun asked him to create some poison for him so he could kill his enemies. Hunayn refused and Al-Ma'mun kept him imprisoned for some time to break him, but he kept to his morals. Al-Ma'mun and his successor also tried to regulate pharmacies by creating laws that would require them to only operate if they had a license. To solve conflict of interest, physicians were banned from owning or even having shares in pharmacies. The caliphate even established a kind of universal healthcare by prohibiting doctors from turning away the sick. My American viewers would probably not get what this means, but well. Al-Ma'mun has a crater named after him on the moon because of the contributions made to science during his reign. During a trip to Egypt, Al-Ma'mun ordered a tunnel dug into the Great Pyramid of Giza to look for knowledge and treasure. This passage, which was later named the Robbers' Tunnel, is the path along which tourists enter the pyramid today. He died shortly after. Together, Harun al-Rashid and Al-Ma'mun started the tradition of funding research in the Islamic world. They were by no means the only patrons. Many emirs and sultans all around the Muslim world sponsored scholars. But these two were the ones who started it all. Their successors carried these traditions for the next 500 years, till they handed the baton to the Europeans. I would like to end with another thing that Bernard Lewis said. In time, Arab scholarship helped illuminate the outer darkness of the lands beyond the northwest frontiers of Islam. Arabic works, some original, some adopted from ancient Greek texts, were translated into Latin. European students went to study in the academies of what were then the Muslim cities of Spain and Sicily. See you next time. Since we've been discussing patrons of art, science, and culture throughout the video, I wanted to tell you that I have made a Patreon account where you can support me by pledging a dollar or more per month. Even if you can't make a pledge, still take a look because I'll be using it as my primary social media account. Although if you pledge some money, you get some really cool perks. So take a look. Thank you for watching.